This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out today, but let's take a look at what happened all this week, beginning with gun control. It was at the forefront of the Senate race this week after the deadly shooting in a Colorado movie theater, even though for one Massachusetts politician, not much has changed.
I think each state should have the ability to determine their own way when it comes to individual rights, Second Amendment rights.
Meanwhile, Governor Deval Patrick calls the controversial three strikes bill a good one, but not a great one.
I do wish that this bill had retained judicial discretion. I need to reflect on what I want to do with that.
Plus, kids take note. Boston School Superintendent Carol Johnson says you will not have to spend an extra 45 minutes in school every day. Also, Boston Mayor Tom Menino slams Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy's disapproval of same-sex marriage, a story even Jon Stewart couldn't resist.
Owner of Chick-fil-A, you're being such an ass, not even Boston will tolerate it.
We try to be as tolerant as we can here at Radio Boston. So joining us now to discuss the week's top stories is Renee Loth, columnist for the Boston Globe and editor of Architecture Boston. Renee, great to see you again.
Good afternoon.
Also with us is John Carroll, mass communications professor at Boston University and author of the blog CampaignOutsider.com, as well as being a man who embraces digital, all things digital, the new blog, It's Good to Live in a Two-Daily Town. .com. It trains a fine eye on the Boston Globe and the Herald. John, good to see you again.
Nice to be here, Meghna. Thanks.
And it is good to live in a two-daily town, I have to say. So let's start with the Senate race here in Massachusetts. And of course, the national news in the country was that shooting in Aurora, Colorado that left 12 dead and scores injured. In the wake of that, gun control resurfaced as a major issue or question or point of debate, including here in the Senate race in Massachusetts. And as we heard in the top, that little bit of tape was from Senator Scott Brown, but it was him speaking in 2011 following the Tucson shooting that killed six and wounded former Arizona Representative Gabrielle Giffords. So let's listen to a little bit more of Scott Brown in 2011.
I think each state should have the ability to determine their own way when it comes to individual rights, Second Amendment rights. I know in Massachusetts we have very strong gun laws. I've worked on them. I've supported them.
Now, Senator Brown has maintained that position to date. He says he supports Massachusetts' ban on assault weapons, but doesn't support renewing a federal ban that expired in 2004, which Democratic candidate Elizabeth Warren does support. So, Renee, first thoughts from you on this yet another divide between Senator Brown and Elizabeth Warren.
Well, you know, I actually think it's, Scott Brown had a pretty good week and managed to finesse his position on gun control into an endorsement from, you know, one of the National Rifle Association's biggest scourges, Mayor Bloomberg of New York, which I think is really significant. It's a coup for Senator Brown. I think that, as a senator, I mean, he refers to his working, you know, hard on tough gun control laws in Massachusetts, but in fact, he had a pro-gun record when he was a legislator in Massachusetts. Now he's able to, ally himself with somebody who I think, his campaign wants people to think of in the same mind space, Mayor Bloomberg and him.
Well, John, let me ask you about that, because it was, a day or two after the Aurora shooting that Mayor Michael Bloomberg was on the radio in New York saying, this is once again just brings gun control back into the spotlight. And yet, as Renee points out, he turns around and then says, I still endorse Senator Scott Brown.
Well, it's payback. Scott Brown voted against a bill. It was called the National Right to Carry Reciprocity Act that would have allowed or would have forced cities like New York to respect concealed carry permits from other states. And Scott Brown voted against that. That was something that was really near and dear to Michael Bloomberg's heart. So, this is really, in a way, payback for that vote. But beyond that, Scott Brown is very clever at picking when and where to diverge from party orthodoxy. And I think that that this is one that he's sort of engaged in a high wire act as far as guns. So the NRA is not all that happy with him. Real gun control advocates aren't all that happy with him. But Michael Bloomberg's holding a fundraiser for him, so I think he's happy with himself.
Let me ask both of you. I mean, given the fact that gun control, for all intents and purposes, basically, it's become a non-issue. I mean, we heard the sort of requisite outcry and call again for national gun control laws from the expected quarters following the shooting in Aurora, Colorado. I mean, Renee, does that make you think that since we've already got pretty stringent laws here in the state of Massachusetts, that it's in the long run not going to really be an issue in this race?
In the Senate race.
In the Senate race here.
You know, it's a very good question. I mean, I think that, yes, we have very good laws here. I think we're actually a pretty good model of what national policy might be. I mean, we also have very low gun murder rates and you know, gun crime rates in this state. So I think it's something for us to be proud of. You know, it's all about whether Elizabeth Warren, you know, the senator's opponent, is able to exploit this situation to her, you know, to her benefit. And, you know, I don't see much of that this week.
John, do you think she's got the chutzpah to do it?
No, it's not even chutzpah. There's just not enough daylight in between the two of them. I mean, Scott Brown sits there and says, I'm for an assault weapons ban. So, you know, where is the issue here? Where's the contention? Let every state settle what it wants to do about the laws. I think that it's a non-starter for Elizabeth Warren, because she's basically on the same side as he is when you come down to the final accounting.
When you come down to what we would do in Massachusetts for Massachusetts laws, but they're running for a national office. So, I mean, she could say we're running for a national office. There's national platform issues and, you know, we do have daylight there.
I don't think gun control is a voting issue.
Yeah, I would give him points for consistency, too, I have to say, in this case, because, you know, his position on the concealed carry law is consistent with a, you know, states' rights kind of approach to gun laws. Not that guns, you know, stop at the border any more than anything else does, but it is consistent for him.
Well, let's stick with the Senate race for another minute here and talk ads, because a bunch of new media ads hit the airwaves and the internet this week, including a spot from Senator Brown that uses a portion of video of Elizabeth Warren that went viral, and it was heralded by Warren supporters. Okay, so let's hear this video. It starts with President Bill Clinton.
A government that understands that jobs must come from growth in a vibrant and vital system of free enterprise.
If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
There is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. You built a factory out there, good for you. But I want to be clear, you moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for.
Okay, John Carroll, is that Senator Brown getting on the "you didn't build that" bandwagon?
Absolutely, and he gets a twofer here. He gets to go after Obama and Elizabeth Warren at the same time for the same basic factory-installed liberal boilerplate that that they're turning into something that's demonizing small businessmen. I mean, the language that he uses, he's got a radio spot out now that he says, I know it's fashionable to attack success and belittle the achievements of our businessmen, but you'll never catch me demonizing job creators. The language that they're using is so overblown at this point, and so out of proportion to what Obama actually said, that it's really remarkable.
Well, what's interesting to me, Renee, is at least in that Scott Brown ad we just heard, we got to hear enough of Elizabeth Warren saying, you didn't move your goods to market on the roads that the rest of us paid for. Obama didn't even get that much of his original statement put in. Why is it that you think that so far as I can tell, from the Democrats, we haven't had sort of a, hey, fact-checking, truth-telling pushback moment?
Well, you know, no, the president has said, you know, my comments were taken out of context and all of this usual, you know, happens to be true. I mean, you know, this is such a great example, this ad, of creative editing. You know, you could, I am sure, find examples of President Obama, you know, praising American exceptionalism and, you know, businesses. And you could also find those Republicans and or President Clinton or whoever else is in that ad saying, you know, something like American success stories all stand on the shoulders of others. I mean, you know that the opposite quotes are out there if somebody were to look for them. I think Governor Romney said something very much like that when he was opening the Olympics in Salt Lake City, something about, you know, you athletes stand on the shoulders of others. So this is not, you know, the quotes are, I think, as I said, creative editing. What's interesting to me, though, and I'm curious what John thinks about this, is, you know, this is the Scott Brown campaign trying to jump on the Republican national meme here that Obama and Warren are cut from the same anti-capitalist cloth. And yet, in order to win in this state, you know, Scott Brown needs the ticket splitters. He needs people who are going to vote for Obama and then also, but are also going to vote for him. And you would think that would mean him trying to show how Elizabeth Warren is different from Obama, not how she's the same.
Well, on that note, let's also, in the interests of sort of fair play here, Elizabeth Warren released a radio spot this week. This one, though, hits the same message she has hit since day one.
We need a cop on the beat to make sure no one steals your purse on Main Street and no one steals your pension on Wall Street.
John, I mean, this is her core message. Is it retaining its effectiveness?
I think she's trying to return the conversation to where she wants it to be, which is her strong suit, which is economics. So this radio ad comes on the one-year anniversary of the establishment of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which she was a prime mover of and should have been the head of, but Barack Obama didn't want to enter into that fight. So she's talking about the effectiveness of that bureau, and they did fine Capital One $210 million for taking advantage of consumers, and a lot of that money is supposed to go back to consumers. We'll see. But $210 million is lunch money to Capital One. So I think in theory it's a good agency. I'm not sure how it's going to work out in practice, but this is the topic that Elizabeth Warren wants to talk about. Not heredity, not who built what. She wants to talk about economic protection for the average American, and that's her calling card.
Well, let's move on, if we can, now to Boston schools, because Boston Superintendent Carol Johnson made an announcement this week where she backed away from a proposal, to extend the elementary and middle school days by 45 minutes every day. Instead, she said she'll just extend the school day in some of Boston's poorest performing schools. Here she is.
We think that this is a way for us to at least begin to address the issue of time. It's not an ideal, because we certainly had hoped that we would reach an agreement that would impact lots more students.
So, Renee, this is quite a turn from Superintendent Johnson. What do you think pushed her in this direction?
Well, you know, she's stuck in a very tight union contract negotiation with the teachers union. That's, part of the reason that she's backed away from this. They opposed the increase in the school day and without compensatory pay. And, you know, I think, I don't know, I think she's not in having a very good year, Carol Johnson, and maybe she just didn't want to pick one more fight.
Well, John, on that note, the Boston Teachers Union president, Richard Stutman, yesterday said, it's time to bring our negotiations to a conclusion. They've been going on for 2 years now. And he also said he's puzzled by Superintendent Johnson's announcement to not lengthen the school day, saying the union supported it. How are we to take Stutman's puzzlement?
Well, it's an issue of money. And they support it because it would put an extra $12,000 in the average teacher's pocket over a course of a year. So they support it there. Superintendent Johnson is saying, we can't afford that kind of money, and you're going to get an increase in your pay in the new contract, and that should cover this extension of the school day. So this is Plan C at this point for Superintendent Johnson. It started out as an expansive plan that was going to cover all the schools, and it was going to be, I think, extra half hour. Then it got cut back, dropped high schools, it got cut back to 45 minutes for the middle schools and elementary schools, and now it's 5 to 10 schools that'll have their day lengthened. So this is a tactical retreat, I think, because the school system can't afford what the teachers want, and the Superintendent Johnson does not want to come out of this with nothing, because I think she's invested too much in it.
Mm. Well, moving on to another controversial subject this week, fast food and the Freedom Trail. No, really, right? It's because Chick-fil-A, the fast food chain, became a lightning rod of controversy this week because earlier this month, the Chick-fil-A CEO, Dan Cathy, made some very public comments about his disapproval of same-sex marriage. Now, that got a very strong reaction from Mayor Tom Menino, which we'll talk about in just a second. But here's CEO Dan Cathy, again, of Chick-fil-A, talking a little bit more about his stance on gay marriage.
I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, you know, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. And I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we would have the audacity to try to redefine what marriage is all about.
So then Mayor Tom Menino wrote a letter to Dan Cathy saying, prideful? Absolutely. We're proud of having gay marriage in Massachusetts, and you're not necessarily welcome here to open a restaurant as you like or would like to on the freedom trail. He didn't say he would stop it per se, but said, you know, he wanted Chick-fil-A to urge Chick-fil-A to reconsider its move. So, John, your reaction to the story?
Well, this is Menino saying, "Stay out of my town," and maybe I'm not saying I'll take legal action against you, but I've got the Inspectional Services Division. I've got all kinds of ways. I've got building permits. I've got all kinds of ways to make your life miserable. This is a misexercise of power on Menino's part. He says, I'm an individual. I have my First Amendment rights. I can say what I want. But when he sends something as the mayor of Boston, that's very different from exercising his First Amendment rights as an individual. So, you know, I'm all for the Muppets boycotting the Chick-fil-A. And I think that, you know, people should organize what they want. Mike Huckabee's organizing a Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. Somebody else is organizing a same-sex kiss-in for next month. That's all great. When Menino comes in and speaks for the government, that's wrong, and it's gone too far.
Well, in fact, Renee, someone on our Facebook page said, wait, let me get this right. If you say something that the city government doesn't like, and then suddenly you may not be able to open your restaurant in this town, isn't that a bit dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, the mayor has a little bit backed off of his initial, you know, angry letter saying that he wouldn't use the power of the city or its departments to interfere with the licensure of a Chick-fil-A. So long as Menino doesn't use the power of the state to interfere with a legitimate business, then I think, you know, he can make statements about whether Chick-fil-A meets his view of what community standards are in Boston. He can make those kinds of statements. But I do think that it's a little bit of a slippery slope, because there are plenty of other businesses and organizations, you know, the Boy Scouts of America, just to name one. You know, there used to be a place called Curves, maybe it's still in business, mm-hmm. which, you know, gave a lot of money to radical sort of anti-abortion, causes. Where does this stop? You have to wonder, you know, if the mayor hasn't, you know, opened up a little bit of a Pandora's box here.
Well, finally, in the couple minutes that we have left, I do want to give both of you a chance to talk with us a little bit about the three strikes law that's currently still sitting on Governor Deval Patrick's desk. He says it's a good bill, not a great one. He wishes there were more judicial discretion in it. He has until Sunday to sign it. So, John, what do you think might be the fate of this law?
Well, given the letter that he just got from Chief Justice Roderick Ireland, I think that that he's not going to sign this, because he's looking for some discretion by the judges, some ability to exercise discretion, and some ability to take into account the personal history of the person who's being sentenced. And I think that he doesn't have either one of those. And Justice Ireland basically said, you're not going to get them. He asked him for an advisory opinion. He said, those are not in there. That's not going to happen. So I think if that's important enough to Governor Patrick, and it seems to be, I would guess that he's not going to sign this bill or send it back for some amendment.
Now, Governor Patrick doesn't have to worry about doing things that are politically unpopular, but this is potentially a very politically unpopular move.
Well, I think John's right that the Chief Justice's letter gives the governor cover. And I think that, you know, in his heart, he'd like to be able to veto this, or at least these portions of this bill. And I think he will take advantage of that. I wouldn't be surprised anyway. You know, sentencing reform is a very difficult thing. The legislators tried to undo some of the draconian drug laws, you know, from the wherever they were, 70s, 80s, for years. This bill was a compromise. It had some, you know, reductions of sentences. It had some get tough sentences, seeming to be able to get through the legislature. But I personally agree with the governor. I think that judges need to have discretion. That's why we have them. That's why we call them judges, because they have judgment. And I think taking that away from them is a problem with this bill.
Well, finally, in the last minute and a half or so, we have time enough for our hubbubs. John?
So I'm sorry to say that the opening volley of the 2012 mass ballot question wars has been fired. It's an ad from the Right to Repair Coalition. It features Monica S. of Taunton, or a reasonable facsimile thereof. I'm not sure which. And it's essentially lobbying for the auto manufacturers to have to reveal their specifications. This is a smokescreen. This whole thing is a smokescreen. The auto parts manufacturers are promoting this because they want to get into the aftermarket, market, and the auto manufacturers are opposing it. I think there's going to be a lot of money in this. This is just the first of, I think, a lot of ads on this topic.
Oh, interesting. We might see facsimiles thereof of potential future
drivers
on the
air.
Renee?
Well, this is an item for a sunny day, or at least a summer day. Did you know that there are at least 140 houses or businesses in Boston that have solar panels on their roofs and are generating solar power? I didn't. The city of Boston, this is part of Mayor Menino's initiative to try to get more renewable energy in the city's overall load, has created this website that is very cool. You can go to it and plug in your own address, your own street address. I discovered there's a solar house on my own, very own block. I didn't know this. And then you can plug in your own address and see, based on the size of your roof area and so on, what is the potential savings in carbon emissions, savings in money that you can yield if you go ahead and, you know, put solar panels on your roof. So it's a very cool website. You learn a lot about solar power and how accessible it's becoming. cityofboston.gov/solarboston is what it's called, and I really dug it.
Solar Boston, cool. Well, mine has to do with volleyball. Our newly named official state team sport.
Oh.
Because while...
That's what the legislature's been doing.
Exactly. You know, forget about three strikes foreclosure prevention or controlling the cost of health care. We have an official team sport. But, of course, that's because it was invented in Massachusetts in 1895. And by 1900, we had a specially designed ball for the sport. And it had also then, by that time, spread to Canada. So volleyball and basketball, both invented here. Team sports in Massachusetts.
Can you have two team sports, or is it only one?
I think officially it may only be
zero-sum game.
Yeah, but,
huh?
You know, the legislature, I'm sure, would like to spend another session on that. But that's my hubbub. John Carroll, communications professor at Boston University and blogger for a Campaign Outsider, and It's Good to Live in a TwoDailyTown.com. Always great to see you, John.
Thanks, Megan.
And Renee Loth, columnist for the Boston Globe and editor of Architecture Boston. Great to see you as well.
Thank you.
So stay with us, because up next, we're going to talk about a change in the public radio landscape and a new acquisition by WGBH. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.